Hey guys, welcome back to Ever Evolving. It's been a while, and this episode is definitely a little bit different from the usual because I'm joined by Katie Holland, who is currently stationed in Egypt, and Rebecca Anastasia Varel, who at the time of this recording was stationed in my house in Cork. It's really exciting. We explore a lot of topics to do with the sacred feminine, the life force energy within us all, healing, and awakened belly dance. And let me tell you, that is interesting, exciting, and you're going to want to hear about it. This podcast is going to tell you all you need to know about the amazing workshop that is being held by Katie and Rebecca in West Cork in April 2024. Any of this piques your interest? It would be a well worthy experience to have. I certainly am very much looking forward to it. So we definitely cover a lot in this episode. And there's lots of giggles and there's lots of deep inhales. So yeah, I hope that you enjoy and definitely consider coming along to the workshop because it's going to be absolutely wonderful, blissful, and lots of fun. Hello people of Earth, I hope that wherever and whenever this finds you, that it finds you well. My name is Emer, I am your host, and this is Ever Evolving, the podcast. Today is a very special episode because it is not just me chatting away on my own. Today I am joined by two extraordinarily powerful women, both of Irish descent, both doing some wonderful work on this planet Earth, healing themselves and holding space for others to do the same. Today I am joined by the wonderful and elegant Rebecca Anastasia Varel and the ethereal dancing queen Katie Holland. Hello guys.
I love that intro.
Yeah. Thank you guys. So I'm just going to let the listeners know a little bit about what this episode is going to cover. Rebecca and Katie are co-hosting a women's retreat in West Cork this April 2024 that sounds set to be a revitalizing and transformative few days working with the divine feminine that is within each and every one of us. And I say working, and it is work, but it sounds like it's going to be really fun because, as I mentioned, Katie is a dancing queen, and I was not exaggerating. Katie has been dancing since she was 3 years old and is the creator of Awakened Belly Dance, which we will be speaking about shortly. So I guess I'll start by asking you, Rebecca, maybe how you guys know each other. What's the story? What's the crack?
Okay, so yeah, I first came across Katie's Awakened Belly Dance work back in 2020 during the lockdown, during COVID. And she was hosting with those that were training with her a 21 days Awakened Belly Dance workshop online, free on Facebook. And I participated in it and I found it extremely powerful and transformative. And I continued doing that. You do it every year, don't you, Katie? So I did it again the following year, 21, and then in 22. And then I got in contact with Katie in 22 for doing one-to-one sessions. And we kind of got to know each other a bit through that. And I then also trained in a dance with Katie last year, 23. I'm counting the numbers as I'm going along. But yeah, so I had such profound experiences with the Wake and Belly Dance. And yeah, I just really wanted to bring it here and share Katie with the world.
So, Katie, would you be able to enlighten us? Well, you could actually maybe begin by letting us know a little bit about your history. What brought you to belly dance?
Okay. I started learning belly dance when I was 15, and this is now 30 years ago, which feels really crazy. So I don't really remember life without belly dance or without dance, because I was learning ballet and tap and jazz from when I was three. So my whole life has been filled with dance. And I knew that I wanted to be a dancer, but I didn't know what kind of dance, but I knew I wanted to do something different to everybody else, of course. And when I was 14, I was actually watching a concert by U2 on the TV, and they had a belly dancer in the Mysterious Ways song. And I saw her and I said, that's what I want to do. And, you know, that's the dance. And so went back to school. I was doing my GCSEs, and we had a careers interview, and the woman was saying, okay, what are you going to do? Like, what's your plan in A-levels in university and everything? And I said, oh, I don't know, but I think I want to be a belly dancer. And she's like, okay. So I said, probably go to art college, and I want to find a belly dance teacher and become professional. So she was actually brilliant and really supported me and tried to help me find a teacher. And it took me about a year, and I started learning and just really dedicated myself to the art form that belly dance is. And I'd had this kind of feeling that I'm telling you the story in a very non-linear way, so
nothing, it's kind of going to jump linear. A little bit. Story of my life. Nothing's linear,
yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of about to say, then I'm like, oh, hang on, I've done it already. So when I was seven on a school trip, we went to a museum, and there was an exhibition about ancient Egypt. So when I saw the pictures of hieroglyphs and the positions that the women were in, I didn't know, obviously, at that point that they're very similar to the arm positions that are used in belly dance. So I saw them and I had this feeling that these arm positions mean something, and I didn't know where that came from or what, and of course my teacher couldn't tell me, and this really stuck with me. So when I started to learn belly dance sort of 7-8 years later, I would ask teachers and say, well, what does it mean? There must be a meaning. And everyone said, no, we're just dancing, you know, these are the techniques and this is the choreography. But there was always something in me that was looking for the meaning of that. And I understood that more years later again when I lived in India, and I was studying Bharatanatyam, which is one of the classical Indian dance forms, where every movement and every hand gesture or position does have a meaning. So in the middle of all of that, when I was 27, just as we were just saying about Pluto going out of Capricorn today, as we record this, it was the time that Pluto went into Capricorn, and I'm a Capricorn. I had a huge Kundalini kind of explosion experience, and I was unconscious. And when I kind of came back to awakening again, I heard a very clear message that told me you have to create a therapy with belly dance, and if you don't do it, you're going to die. And I can
direct.
Say that, I guess,
that's
very what?
It's a pretty clear message.
Yeah, and I mean, it was really, now I can say it a bit more flippantly. Yeah. For years, I couldn't say it without feeling like I'm going to kind of collapse again. But that was literally all that I heard. And I was lying on the floor and I thought, what? Because at this point, I was completely immersed in the showbiz world in India. I lived in India for 9 years, and I was dancing professionally. And I was, just in like the celebrity world, really, which was also very difficult for somebody who's very sensitive and empathic. So I kind of had this sort of a foot in both sides, I guess. And along with that, again, kind of circling around, when I finished art college, I studied massage and Reiki. So the holistic therapies and the kind of dance that was developing was going alongside each other. But I'd never really thought that I could bring it together. I saw it as quite separate parts of me. And when I had this Kundalini experience, it was not only the Pluto, it was also the beginning of my Saturn return. It was like everything just went bang.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I have to find a way. And then I started to remember all of these feelings I'd had, or these ideas that, does it mean something, and do the positions mean something? Mm-hmm. And I started to kind of find connections, and then what began as a very arduous 8 years, which was the time it took me to be able to really launch what was Awaken Belly Dance into the world. So it was 8 years of, I guess, a very big dark night of the soul, but also of revelations as well, and a lot of studying, and I learned Sufi whirling in that time, and studied the Gurdjieff movements and Osho dynamic meditation, and slowly I was understanding more, mostly about me, my own body, my own energy, how to manage it, how to work with it, because I then also had other Kundalini explosions as well, not as strong as the first one, but still quite crazy things happened. And then I got to the point of, okay, well, this is Awaken Belly Dance, and that was now I guess eight, nine years ago this year. So
can I ask you, Katie, just for people listening who may not know what Kundalini is, would you be able to give a little description on that?
Yeah, it's basically our life essence, or what is us. It's the light that's inside of us, and if we didn't have it, then we wouldn't be alive in a body. It's like that spark within, and lots of people that talk about Kundalini or teach about it, they speak as that it's something that we need to activate, and that we need to kind of work towards, like grasping. But I think of it more as that it is always and already alive and active in us, because we're alive in what we think of as being alive. So it's here, but what gets in the way of fully integrating it is all our fears and traumas, and maybe ancestral, like the epigenetic experiences that we hold, and it's all of these things, and like our patterns and mind control from society. This is what makes the distance, but actually it's already here. So Kundalini is a bit of a buzzword these days, but you could call it your life force, like in Star Wars.
It's the force, the field of force. It almost feels more sort of encompassing using life force as well than the word Kundalini, doesn't it? I feel sometimes that feels limited or restrictive, because it's used from a teaching, that word, or comes from a teaching.
Yeah, and there's also lots of thinking, which also it's what I've been researching the last 5-8 years about, with Kundalini and with the chakras, and about this idea of implant overlays, and Kundalini as a entity. So how true is it to our true essence? You know, and are these things put in place at birth as control systems?
Kundalini.
And what's really our true essence?
Kundalini is an entity, meaning you're kind of putting a word, you're giving it a separation kind of thing?
So I think of, there's our pure essence, our life force, and then over the top of this, and the same with the chakras, And with also, in lots of different ways, there can be these implanted overlays or control systems, which is probably another podcast in itself. But these, the way that I see it, it's like like a computer, you know, like a motherboard, and you have the base of it, and then you have these systems that overlay that this controls this and this controls this. So as we know, or the way I think of it, is that everything in this world is inverted. So maybe Kundalini, what we've been told is Kundalini, isn't actually bringing the freedom and enlightenment that we've been told. Maybe actually it's the opposite, and it's squashing really what's the true light within us.
Cool. So I suppose, speaking of that life force energy, would you like to tell us a bit about the inner dance and what that concept is all about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think with inner dance, I find that each person that facilitates it, they have their own flavour to it, their own sort of vibration and frequency that they add to it, and then how they present it. And I know you've heard me like say it a million times already in the sessions, but so basically in an inner dance session, what we are doing is, as a collective, as a group consciousness, we're surrendering to our life force energy. And through the resonance of that, it becomes active within our bodies and moves through the body, held by the frequency of the music in the session, which we, well, I'm working with anyway, with from the training, the 12 stages of awakening. So go on a bit of a journey, a wave. And yeah, there's releasing that can happen. There is, you can go on a, some people leave and go on a trip. Yeah. Maybe Katie would like to share some more about that, because she's actually currently running a year-long study group.
Oh, wow.
On it. Yeah.
Go for it. Go for it.
Even as you were talking, I was feeling myself starting to, like, ooh, okay, I'm there.
I'm actually, can I just show you? I'm holding a rock right now, and I didn't mean to pick this up, but I think there's a reason for that.
It's like, stay on the earth right now. if first of all, if I can just add to what I was just talking about with the overlays and everything, the way, or I guess my my interest in life is how free that we can be, free from ourselves. I'm free from anything that might be imposing on our or encroaching on our freedom. So this is why I look at things in this way of like, okay, what's really the truth in this, and is it a like a program, like a computer program, that type thing that we're holding, and what would happen if we could let go of that, you know, like this belief in the chakras and the control that they potentially have over us. So yeah, so I'm coming from this kind of place of how free can we be, and how far can that go?
Wow.
So yeah, with inner dance, I'm one of the trainers for, it's a year-long advanced course, and I think there's something like almost 200 people around the world on the course, and there's different trainers in different countries who are teaching in their own languages, and we have pretty much every week there's either a group call with our sort of local groups. And then we have the global calls with Pai Villaraza, who's the founder of Inner Dance. And it's taking people through really the history of Inner Dance and how it's evolved, and lots of study and data that's been gathered over the years. And then so that people who want to hold their own trainings or want to be facilitators, they can then go on to do this. And it's the first time that we've ever done something like this. So it's really, really interesting, but also kind of nerve-wracking as well. But now we've started, it's like, okay, we're in it now. But the build-up to it was like, ooh, it's like holding so much. But yeah, it's I feel really privileged to be part of it.
There's just something there that's coming to me in relation to the inner dance and that connecting into the life force energy and the control mechanisms, and sort of bringing it down to like our general day-to-day control mechanisms that we have within ourselves of what's right, what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. And connecting into that energy and allowing that energy to move, it's like our purest authentic self. And so it's like when it meets that those stories within you that have, you could say, programmed or conditioned you to believe something about yourself, it meets that and it, to know how to say it, but the frequency of it, it's like clearing it, isn't it? The energy of it, it's releasing it out.
It definitely it does the clearing. When you were talking about it, I was going to say, like, it just burns it away. I don't know, like, whatever this, the life force energy is made of, it feels like fire. Because with my own experience of inner dance, I've been to your sessions, which have been so life-changing, and I was only kind of reflecting on it yesterday, that even the way I carry myself through the day, because I would have had a lot of mental illness as a teenager, and then having a lot of like self-conscious thoughts and self-deprecating thoughts and criticism and just like lots and lots of layers of that, like on its own, and then thinking about my first ever inner dance session where I felt like I couldn't move. There was that feeling of I was still in my head and I wasn't able to surrender and I wasn't able to release anything. But something shifted because I went back again and then there was a bit more freedom, and now it just seems that I go into the space, and because you hold such a lovely safe space, I find it really easy to just lay down and to just absolutely surrender. And the way that it has translated into my life is just the sense of this new drive almost, and it's coming from a more pure place, and it's different from this kind of like egoic drive that like could be present. And just egoic not meaning like, not even meaning an inflated ego. My ego is, or like my sense of self was pretty low. So not having that in the driving seat, it just feels like there's something lighter that, is moving.
It's like it's not from the brain, it's not the mind making decisions.
Yeah, it's more the heart, and it's more, it's way less about the mind. I think that's what it has done for me a lot as well, is that not having the mind as the master, not having the mind at the helm. That's just, it's just incredible. But yeah, it is, it's very powerful work. And as I said, it's for me and for a lot of people, for most people, it's all about the space that is held, and just having that safe space where it's safe to surrender and move and screech and and sing and giggle. The giggling is wonderful. But yeah, I've often come like straight after work or something, and just, or going through a heartbreak, and you think that you're going to just bawl down crying, and I end up giggling for like an hour and a half. But yeah, it really is, that practice of surrender is so powerful.
And it's that inner trust, your trust in yourself as well, the trust in that, the sacred and the divine and the authentic truth.
Yeah, and also with both inner dance and awakened belly dance, it's coming back to our body's intelligence and everything that we hold in the body, all the answers to all the questions we haven't even thought of yet. It's all in this place and in ourselves, and we have access to the morphic resonance, like the collective consciousness of everything, so we can access information from the beginning of time to the all around and from our ancestors and from the multiple lives that we might have had, and we can bring it all more into a unity within us, so that that self-awareness and self-knowing is coming from within. And when we start to unlock all of those places in ourselves where we're holding that, that's when, yeah, you get the laughing and the emotions and the shaking and, you know, and the sort of expression and sometimes stillness as well. It can be really an inner journey.
I was just going to ask, would you be able to kind of give us an overview of, or in depth, whichever you want to go, of awakened belly dance and how it might be different to kind of, so for inner dance, in my experience, one would lie on a mat and just allow, you know, the music to happen and allow the body to then, if it wants to move, it can move. And if it doesn't want to move, it doesn't move. But so I can imagine awakened belly dance is a bit different than that. So please do tell us.
There are elements of inner dance because I originally went to inner dance as part of my research on my journey of awakened belly dance. I had no plan that I was going to be a facilitator or hold trainings or, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. I'd been looking for somebody who knew about brainwaves and how to work with them through music and through movement. And I hadn't found anybody apart from Pi. So I went thinking, okay, I'm on my research mission and, mm-hmm. you know, that's it. And of course, a whole lot more happened. And so as you said, with inner dance, everybody starts lying down and there's no guidance in the movement. It's completely coming from the person. Mm-hmm. And this can be different every time you go to a session. Like, you've probably found that sometimes you might be very active or noisy, or you might be very quiet and still, and combinations of those. Sometimes it can be very trippy. Sometimes you feel that nothing's happened. And then the next day you wake up and think, hang on, something did happen, but I don't know what. And then the facilitator will come and work on you. So there's touch involved as well, if people are happy for that. Mm. With awakened belly dance, we're also working with the brain waves. And I expanded on the theory from inner dance, and I connected with the ancient Egyptian alchemy and sort of combined this with brainwaves, with movement, with different stages of emotion, and then of course working with the belly dance movements, because they're made up of circles and figures of eight, which is exactly like sacred geometry when you look at the flower of life and all these different sort of egg of life and everything. They're all from circles and eights. And I realized that we, in a similar way to Qigong or Tai Chi, that we can cultivate energy within our body through the belly dance movements. And so it's more guided, and there's more work as a group, dancing as a group, sometimes in partners, sometimes solo. And then there'll be moments where there's free movement as well. So there's I guess you could say more guidance with awakened belly dance, and more kind of themes that come up that are specific to what's happening with the group at that time. Whereas in a dance, it's kept quite open, and still themes show up, but there's say with awakened belly dance, we might look at something like a rites of passage for menstruation, or working with the heart and sort of self-love and compassion, and how to bring that into our sensual self. So there's more themes, I suppose you could say it that way.
Yeah, because I've found any themes that kind of come up in inner dance, unless there is a sharing circle afterwards, they mightn't even come out, and you mightn't even see the connection there. In awakened belly dance, is it more through the process that you might notice the theme that's coming up, or is it more of a purposeful thing?
No, usually I've got several playlists which are working sort of with different themes or like different energy centers, but what actually happens is completely intuitive and depending on the group and the group energy. So anyone that trains with me, I teach them or guide them in this way, that it's not to have anything planned in advance. We're really listening to our body and connecting with the group, and then this is what brings things out. So it can be all kinds of it can go anywhere. It can be very cosmic. It can be very, you know, like about relationships and very here and now. We've been to all kinds of places.
sounds wonderful. but also, would you be able to let us know a little bit about the brain waves? I would find that very interesting. What you learned on your research, trip.
Okay. I mean, I'm still learning. That was the very beginning and the sort of basis that, this is possible. Mm. And now, this year, it's 10 years that I've been involved with Inner Dance, and Pi is doing so much research, and we're finding out more and more things, and they're actually measuring brain waves when certain kinds of sounds or music is played, mm. and seeing which parts of the brain activate. And I suppose I'm much more on the intuitive side than the scientific side, and I have that as my basis. But where the way that I work, and even with Inner Dance, I don't have set playlists. I do it all on the spot, depending on the group, because I go with where the energy is guiding me. So the brainwaves, if you think of it a bit like steps, that you're taking people into waves. So you're building the brain waves through the music or the movements. You're building it up to a point, and then you're dropping down, and then you're building up, and then dropping a bit lower, and dropping, then rising higher. So it's kind of a bit like a roller coaster. There's maybe several roller coasters combined into one.
But what's just coming to me there, because I'm thinking about the Hathors and Tom Kenyon, and I'm thinking again of how this is from, you know, the Egyptian, looking back, tying into that with the music and the sound waves used for many things, for healing is one of them. But actually, have you done some? I assume you have, but you must have some information actually in relation to, like, in Egyptian times and their use of sound and instruments. Because I know you've got your little thingy.
Sistrum. Yeah, it's quite big.
This is an audible podcast.
The thingy.
I would like to actually add, because I know you have a connection with ancient Egypt, Kemet. And if you would let us know about that as well, and then I will come to you, Rebecca, because I find it very, very interesting. It's fascinating.
Well,
where to begin? 4,000 lives ago.
I've been living in Egypt for 4 years now, and or 3 years. 3 or 4 years, and I've been working with the Blue Lotus since 2020 as well. So this was from the ancient times in Egypt, and it was used in the dream temples and for rituals, which would have also included music and dance. So we know, of course, that the ancient Egyptians were very into immortality and tracking the astral realm, and this is exactly what the Blue Lotus was used for as well. It was like how to, again, know yourself, and also how to create these dream world experiences of not here but not there, and how far can you go with that. So they were creating near-death experiences, and the same in India as well, as in Gujarat, where the Tantra temples are. They were working with the Datura plant, which is even more lethal. I mean, Blue Lotus is very subtle, but it's very powerful. But I've had near-death experiences with the lotus myself, and lots of dream time experiences too. So part of that, the shaky thing, is the sistrum. and then the frame drum as well, which you can see especially in Dendera and Abydos temples, which are a few hours from Luxor. And And this was part of taking people into trance states. And also there was a necklace called the Menat as well. And this was also used like a shaker. Mm. And so they were appear to have been very adept at this, yeah, how to go into conscious trance. And this is something that really interests me. And of course, in day-to-day life, through the TV and everything else, mm. most people are in some kind of hypnotic trance, TikTok and swiping or Tinder or, yeah. or whatever.
not the Tinder trance. So,
how many levels of trance are we in, even without knowing it or without trying to be? So Inner Dance and Awakened Belly Dance, it's also allowing us to be in these conscious trance states where we can explore. And I feel that these ancient societies, they were doing the same thing in their way that they found, whether it was through plant medicine or mushrooms and music as well. But what also really interested me was at that time that I found Inner Dance, lots and lots of people I knew were going to ayahuasca ceremonies. Mm. And I felt like I want to have this experience, but I don't want to put something in my body. And then when I found out about Inner Dance, that was exactly what the woman said to me, because we were talking about ayahuasca and I told her that, and she said, well, you know, maybe you could. And this was what really, as well as my research, this is what drew me. It was like, how can I really kind of access my own natural DMT and what might come from that? And then how can we live in constant connection with the DMT? So not necessarily meaning that we're kind of tripping all the time, but being more in this kind of liminal place that it's like the as above, so below. Like we're here and embodied and at the same time, completely connected to everything. Mm. And this is what I like. and to also support others to find this. Mm.
Yeah, it's like that integration. So, isn't it? It's the integration of what's the other, the astral and the...
Yeah, the kind of wholeness of it all.
Mm. Yeah, rather than escape and being out in the woo-woo world, like how, because I, growing up, I was having lots and lots of psychic experiences. And after going to that museum, as you asked me about Egypt, it was like something opened up in me and I started to have a lot of memory recall about ancient Egypt and other lifetimes. And I was really exposed to lots of things, good and not so good. And I didn't know how to manage it or how to shut it down. So that was a big journey for me, but at the same time, a huge learning as well. And also the biggest part of that was how to stay in my body and not fly off every second or not want to escape. how to really be here and be embodied in my work and offer that as a safe place. Yeah.
What age were you, Katie, when you went to the museum, did you say?
Seven.
Wow, that is a lot for a seven-year-old to then begin to have those experiences. Did somebody teach you how to remain grounded?
Yeah, I had some very patient teachers. I'd say probably from when I was 18, the massage course that I mentioned, that was the first person that said it to me like a slap in the face. Like, you have to stay in your body, you know. You're just not going to get anything done that you're telling me of all these dreams that you have. And then, my Reiki teacher and shamanic dance teacher. So I think it probably took me a good 12 years to really sort of stop fighting it and to accept that it's okay and that my body is a safe place to be. Because when I was a child, also younger than seven, I didn't remember it at that point. It was only when I got older, but I had a lot of ET abduction type experiences.
Wow.
So for me, it wasn't, I didn't feel safe, whether it was when I was asleep or when I was awake, because I was seeing and experiencing things either way. So it wasn't really clear to me about what's waking life and what's sleeping life. And so this has been a huge something.
wow. Cool. So you have a connection with the old ancient Egypt as well.
yeah.
Do you want to tell us about it? Tell us about it.
Yeah, I guess I kind of only really came into my awareness that's what has been going on a couple of years ago when I experienced my own Kundalini awakening experience, which was a bit of a blast of an experience. And
did that last?
It was about 6 months experience.
Yeah.
But I was also at that time quite obsessive about meditating as well. I needed to meditate like 3 times a day. I was like meditating 3 hours a day because I felt like I needed more and more and more information.
Yeah.
But through those meditate, one of the first, when I first had the Kundalini awakening and I was chanting and shaking around like a mad thing, as you do, and I didn't know that was a part of that.
Yeah.
But out of nowhere appeared in my hands these two rods. Well, I didn't know they were rods at the time. It's like those two energy bars is the only thing I could explain them as in my hands. And I held on to them and the shaking stopped and I could still feel the energy in my body, but I wasn't flying around all over the place. So then I was like, oh, I wonder what these are. So I Googled it, energy bars, and then what came up was the Egyptian rods, and then realizing that was balancing my energy in the meditation. And yeah, so I've had a few, like, I guess you could say it's past life experience. It could be multiple other things as well. Another thing I found quite interesting is, like, I had a session there last year with someone who's quite experienced, 20, 30 years doing laying of the hands, and there was some past life stuff came up about Egypt and with being in basically a soul retrieval coming out of, I was in a tomb or in my sarcophagus, and I needed my organs placed back in me so I could my spirit could fly up to heaven and come back and integrate with my soul. But it was interesting when he said that, it kind of made sense in why I liked being surrounded by gold. When I was a teenager, I got gold, had gold walls around my bed. And then when I was like... Yeah, it was like a £1 roll of gold wallpaper on sale, because who uses gold wallpaper? and then when I was doing my art therapy training, actually, in that house, they asked, oh, what colour wallpaper do you want? And I actually just said, oh, maybe something kind of light and yellowish. And I remember then telling my housemate, oh, I used to have gold walls. And then they ended up buying gold wallpaper without me saying it to them.
Wow.
And so I had gold wallpaper for 3 years and I was living in the house surrounded around my bed.
Nice. Well.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I would relax to like feel safe. My protection was to imagine that I was in like a gold chain. And I was like, oh, that's because a part of me you're still there. That's why I was recreating like it around me, because but now that's integrated, maybe there'll be
now my walls are blue.
But also, yeah, there's a lot I guess that could be said about. But that's just my sort of
The retreat being called Kemet I Era, it makes sense that the two of you would have lots of connection with ancient Egypt. I'm very curious about Sufi whirling.
Okay.
If that's, you know, I know it did, that wasn't very organic, but I still... It's here, it's in my mind, I can see the whirling dervishes. If you would, please let us in on that. I guess that's a sacred dance. Does it work in the same way as inner dance and awakened belly dance?
Yes. I feel that I've had equally powerful experiences in all of them, and it's different ways to access. I mean, in awakened belly dance, we also work with whirling as well, usually in the sessions. And it comes from the Sufis as a connection to Allah or a connection to the divine, and also a huge expansion of the heart. And again, it comes back to the as above, so below, that the arms are up connecting to the cosmos or to Allah, and the feet are connected to the earth. And I've studied it from a completely freestyle perspective, no focus on technique, and you just turn however you want to. And then I've also been at the other end of the spectrum, which was my most recent teacher, and that was in 2020 in Turkey. And I spent 6 weeks learning in a cave underground, and this was in the Mevlana tradition, and his lineage goes back to Rumi. So I was really, really lucky, because usually they don't teach women, and especially Western women. And in his line, I think from what I understood, I'm the first woman that's been sort of allowed.
Wow.
And obviously there's lots and lots of lineages, but with this particular teacher and his line. And so then I learned from a very structured way, and more like you would see on the TV or when they're in the white dresses and everything, and it's very in a particular shape. I spent, I think, 3 weeks of that 6 weeks turning, holding a curtain rail. So that, to get used to
it. Is that balance, or is that to keep your posture?
Everything, and to keep your arms up. Yeah, and my arms would slip, and he had his stick, and he'd poke it and be like, come on, up, up. And I was like, oh, God.
Wow.
So, yeah, but again, with the whirling, I've had out-of-body experiences, I've had visions, I've had kind of quantum life recall. I feel there's obviously so many different modalities, and with what came from ancient times, depending on the culture and maybe what their focus was, they had different gateways to access, but really it's all coming back to the true connection with the self and the soul and the spirit being free. And I wanted to add to what Rebecca said about with your meditating, and obviously you were very focused, and when I had that first kind of crazy explosion, I was brushing my teeth, and I had been doing nothing to try and make anything happen. It was like, I didn't even know what had happened for about 8 months. I was literally going to bed, and I was in Kathmandu brushing my teeth, and it was like, bam, okay, you're gonna die if you don't do this. I was like, what the fuck?
That's so unprovoked. Oh my god.
I feel like I'm supposed to be here today. It's like that guy.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah, and it's always happened for me in really random things. Another time I was in the check-in queue in Delhi Airport, flying back to England after doing a retreat, again, boom. Another time, I was lying in the garden when I was living in Bali. It's just lying happily, looking at the birds in the sky.
Don't get too comfortable, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So in that way, I've been lucky, but also it's been quite a shock and quite intense on my body, because after it happened the first time and I started to understand it, I then recognized it the other times, but it was still, it's very intense on your nervous system when it happens in that way. And I know, like, Rebecca has felt that as well.
It's quite a challenge for the mind. I mean, the consciousness is literally being smashed open, or the psyche is being smashed open to make space for new information coming through as well. That's for me, from my experience. And it can be quite scary. You can see things and you don't know if what you're seeing is true or it's an illusion or what is going on anymore. It's kind of a very weird place to be.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned before as well about the loss of memory. And I'm kind of, when I say I'm feeling more fully myself, I think it's because I lost some memories or from the unlearning. And I feel like more of that's coming back to me now, or I'm after relearning things. And it's like, oh, it's nice to be back. Mm. And then it's like, oh, I also can feel one on the way. But I don't
Yeah, I think it's almost like space gets created so that you can then retain what's actually useful. And there's no question about it that when you're working with your really true essence, you have to do the shadow work. And when you're really looking at this and fully healing and integrating those shadows, it's then this battle within us, whether it's space for memories and being overloaded or space for really being in our truth, it then all stops, because you're kind of gathering yourself back together and then choosing, well, who am I? And who am I today? Who am I next week? And nothing's fixed. That pressure can be off of having to be in a box and pleasing everybody else, because you can choose who you want to be in every second of the day. Something is going to be shifting because you're shifting. Yeah.
I noticed that when Katie said shadow work, we both went, So because I have a lovely neurodiverse brain that goes from one topic to another, I want to go back to Egypt, because I forgot to ask you about the ancient Egyptian alchemy.
What would you like to know?
I would.
Where is it coming from?
I guess, what is it? If that is not too much of a broad question.
I can tell you what I feel it is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
And remember, I could change in any moment, so if you ask me in 2 months, I might give you a different answer.
I love that. Commit to nothing.
But as I feel in this moment, it's always coming back to the as above, so below, and this this integration, like the really deep integration of every single part of it, and that's when you get the true alchemy. That it's like, now I'm getting this image of a kind of spinning helix, whirling like DNA kind of thing, that we're then creating like a vortex of light within us that is really our power and that propels us forward. And this alchemy, it's holding all the potential of who we can be.
And you mentioned Bruce Lipton before, and I'm a huge fan. And I guess with the alchemy and that, and the epigenetics, so that like the way we are connected to our ancestors and our mothers, 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 and like all of it, through the dance, no matter what modality of dance. It's my understanding that that's what we're kind of alchemizing.
Yeah, I mean, from the, say, the Middle Ages, when they talked about alchemy, there was this obsession about how to create gold, like gold as a physical object, and of course to then be rich. But really, the true alchemy is it's you as becoming the gold. Mm. So, as I said, the highest potential that we can be. So really, when we're listening and following this intelligence of our body, it's giving us access to whether it's our own traumas that we've experienced, or, and of course it doesn't always have to be trauma, it can be lots of joy as well. And also the epigenetically, it can be the experiences and the gifts that our ancestors held, because of course there's so much knowledge that was that's in the bloodline, and that's also within ourselves. So we can have full access to this, and it just depends on the person, because of course it's not all going to happen at once. It's like layers that you might have a certain focus with one thing or another. And for me, this has been a sort of ongoing healing that I've been doing for most of my adult life about ancestors, and there's a big connection with drowning and shipwrecks and various sea related things. But in particular, in the last year, this came up. It was like I got really to the core of it, but it's taken me maybe 25 years to do that, but I've been chipping away.
Wow.
And it's something that's really like one of the root layers of epigenetic trauma that I had been holding in my body. So it can be things like this where you feel like, God, you know, it's just on and on and on, and you uncover something else and something else. But then also it's a bit like a magical mystery tour of, okay, nothing might happen for a couple of years, and then suddenly bum, bum, bum again. But then other things, it can come in instantaneously. So it depends on the person and how deeply rooted it is. But definitely what I've seen working with people as well is so much transformation can happen when ancestral anything, trauma or whether it's an acceptance of gifts, like I say, or of the wisdom, when this is integrated more, then people's lives can really change.
Yeah. I think it's important to say as well that it's that person changing their own lives, and that it's not a
yes.
It's this space is held by somebody, like either one of you people who are wonderful and trustworthy and create a safe space, but it is that person in their sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
We were speaking about that word yesterday. But yeah, I think it's important to note that as well, that like everybody has the power, the healing power, to heal themselves. And it is hard work, but when you get to do it by sharing a space with like lovely people and moving your body and stuff like that, it becomes play. And I think that's really important as well to put emphasis on that the hard work coexists with the play.
Yeah, something that's coming up for me there as well is when it comes to the healing, is recognizing that we all innately, our bodies are constantly healing themselves. Mm-hmm. The cells are constantly healing themselves. The psyche is constantly, it's actually more to do, I feel anyway, with releasing what blocks that, what's preventing that from mm-hmm. happening. So the stories that we tell ourselves, the disbelief that we have the ability to be healthy, or the disbelief that we deserve something, it's releasing that, and that allows the healing to happen. I think sometimes when people hear you have the power to heal yourself, they think they need to go and then train in Reiki or something and then lay hands on themselves. And that's how you do that healing is done to you, but it's not. Healing is always happening. It's actually clearing what blocks it. And it's just like that goes across in all things, like in nature and the earth as well. She's always healing herself in a constant state of that. It's only, not only, but it's density and blocks and belief constructs and all the rest of it blocking that its path. I just feel that makes it a little bit easier to understand that you don't have to do anything to heal yourself. That's happening already.
Adding to that as well, that what I've seen time and time again, what that block or that resistance comes back to is the people's fear of their own power.
Mm.
So whether, like, a really obvious example is thinking of the, like, say the witch trials that you were thought as something magical or doing something bad with magic. And so you were killed or you were tortured for it. And again, these kind of things stay in the bloodline because maybe that person vowed to never do that again or to shut down this divine connection to the bloodline. So then nobody has access to it. And although we might not be consciously aware of these kind of soul contracts that are made, they stay because it's energy, and energy is always here. So often people have this fear that unconsciously that if I show myself, if I show my power, then potentially I'm going to die.
It's not safe.
And which of course is something that is scary. And so what we're doing in these processes is really taking people through a deathing process of themselves. And as Rebecca said before, it's like everything is breaking down, deconstructing. So that we're supporting people to let go of that fear of what we think death is, so that we can live more fully in a spiritual death thing. And through that, really coming back again, just like again and again, coming back to our personal alchemy and who we are. Mm.
So, this being a women's retreat, now that you've brought up the witch trials, it does bring my awareness to the womb, and that a part of the retreat there will be yoni steaming, which I personally am super excited for. But I guess it's not all bad things, but particularly trauma that might be there in the womb from your from your bloodline and
ways in which the womb, claiming back our power of the womb, and the ways that it's misused. Maybe there's hooks there, but maybe there's ancestral trauma there and other things like that. What's your thoughts and words on that, maybe?
And really the potential is infinite. Endless, you know. It's there's so much creative power. I always think of the womb, whether somebody has a physical womb or not, there's still an etheric womb there. So it's like a treasure chest. You know, what can we find there? What's the potency and the creativity that we have access to? Because we have way more eggs, and men have way more sperm than we actually need for how many babies that we create. So, you know, what is that? What's held in those little seeds or those sparks of creation? And how can we channel that into every aspect of our life, really? And to give ourselves access to it. So it's like the womb is a chalice, treasure chest that's holding the gold.
Yeah, it's like, it holds all information, doesn't it, from the beginning of time, or pre-beginning of time, because, So we want to kind of clear possibly anything that could be interfering with our access to that, or if someone else or something else was accessing that information from there as well, and that creative that powerful creative energy that's in our wombs. It's for us to use how we choose to use it.
Mm. So it's removing the blocks again to reveal the wisdom that is there anyway.
Mm.
That we just may not feel access to.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, say from sexual partners, any energy or energetic hooks which are still connecting, which of course this can be from 20 years ago or from last week. And it's like people, not only through the womb, it could be any part of us, but people can sort of hook into our energy if we allow it, because it's only if at some level we're given permission. Nobody can ever take your energy, but if maybe you still have feelings for somebody, or maybe, you know, there's something that's still connecting you, then also for them it can be very unconscious. For some people, no, but for most people it's an unconscious thing, that there's this connection between you, that you also might be receiving energy from them. So it's just releasing anything like that that's not yours, and reclaiming your body for yourself.
And does that is that something that happens in awakened belly dance kind of every time, or could that be one of the themes that comes up, like the womb and
clearing? We're always working with the womb and the hips, and that kind of theme does come up a lot, because of course people from even current partners as well, there can be unhealthy connections. So this is a theme that comes up probably more than most.
Especially, I'm just thinking as well that it's wonderful that this is coming to this this Ireland. We have a hard time moving our hips, I'm not gonna lie. we've had Irish dancing, which has been super restrictive. I loved it. I did it for years and years. It's a beautiful type of dance. But I do think, because I'm thinking of my own experience, like I've been, and I know I'm not the only one, but self-conscious about dancing and moving hips and feeling too sexual, when in reality,
yeah,
I love feeling sexual, and just because you feel sexual doesn't mean you're asking for anything, as we all know, but it can be perceived that way. And I guess figuring out a safe way to do that, I feel as though it's very empowering, the awakened belly dance.
Yeah, and also that being sensual, it doesn't have to be sexual.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Connecting with our sexuality.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say as well about the dance aspect of it, is that for people to come to the retreat, they don't need any experience in dance or belly dance. The focus isn't about technique, it's not a performance. This is really about connecting with our body. And because people always ask, and they say, oh, do I have to show my belly? And no, not at all. You can be in your onesie if you want to.
That is good to know as well. And that is fantastic.
Yeah. But as you say, there's this such stigma, and even the pubic bone, like the pubis, in Latin, it means shame. So even this part of our body has been named shame. Wow. So if you think about everything that's been projected to that area and to our hips, and what it is to be a woman or a young girl, and you know, how to be a good girl and have your legs closed, and what you should wear, and I mean, yeah, I think it's time to fuck this shit, really.
Yeah, I love that. I love that expression. I think you're right. I think it is time to fuck this shit. Yeah, and it's very exciting. And I know a lot of people who feel the same. It's like this urge to be sensual, but there is blocks there. There's a lot of blocks there, and I've definitely experienced them myself, and have had to use that fire.
I'm feeling like something that I feel I've learned, and probably from the awakened belly dance as well, as much as anything else, is that owning of the sensuality of my sexuality.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, I was thinking recently, you know, I can feel sexual and or sensual, and it's not, I'm not asking for something.
No.
And to hold it in my own body, and actually for me to experience it and enjoy it for myself, and even just walking and feeling my feet on the ground, and almost this constant making love to the self just in the being, and that's like a really lovely feeling and state to be in, rather than feeling like, oh, if I have this, I must now find someone to give it to, this energy,
they
must
constantly being given away.
Yeah, but it can be a state of being in that deliciousness.
Yeah. It is, it's yummy. and I guess with that as well, the retreat days are kind of divided, well, connected and divided, in the three lower chakras. So would it be connected, is that connected to the sensualness of the dance?
I guess instead of being focused on what we think of as chakras, we're looking more at the themes connected to those different areas of the body.
Okay.
So where we hold our power, our creative power, our kind of more warrior power, and then our foundation with the roots as well. And how this also connects with the upper body and coming through the heart with this. So I wouldn't say we're chakra focused as such, because as I said at the beginning, I'm thinking more, how can we be free of these chakras? Because it's kind of creating a like compartments when you think of the way that the chakra system's laid out, and we have everything, as we keep saying, everything is within us. So why do we need these to be compartmentalized? And if this bit behaves, then this bit will activate or open, and then now I need to pacify this bit so that this bit will, you know. And I just think, oh god, it's like, enough.
Even the way I said it about like the days being divided, I immediately was like, well no, they're connected, but they're like it creates a separation and a division.
Yeah, and it's like the fragmentation and a split, and I can't help always thinking about like being aware of not splitting the psyche, and it's like a similar version, it's like splitting the body.
Yeah.
And it's when there's that split, there's not the unified wholeness or integration within. It's kind of, and it's confusing then, because it's like, it could be one part of the body wants one thing, another part wants another thing. And I suppose when we're clearing and unifying that energy field, it's like, what on the wholeness of it all is best for the unified self and the unified collective field consciousness as well, living in that more possibly.
Fingers crossed.
So it is going to be from the 19th of April to the 21st of April, and the accommodation is camping, though there are some beds available in a dorm and the house on the property, which will be an extra charge of €75 for the people who book those spaces. But you have to book them fast, because quite a few people are wanting those the beds rather than the camping. Though with this centre, when it comes to the camping, if the weather is bad, you're actually allowed, you are given permission to sleep inside the centre as well, if you have your sleeping bag, whatever. Exchange, or whatever we like to say, for the retreat, it's the early bird price is €395 before the 31st of this month, January. So that's very little time left on that, and then after that it's going to be €444. everything is included in the price, in the sense of all your meals are going to be included, which are going to be cooked by a professional chef, also known as my brother, who is a professional chef, and he is super duper excited creating the menu for this, and like in the theme of Egypt as well, and trying to come up with like his. So I'll see what we have.
That's how you know it's going to be good food. There's a lot of passion in that.
Yeah, there is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And. So we haven't mentioned there is going to be a Blue Lotus ceremony as well. I guess we have spoken a bit about Blue Lotus. That's included. The cacao is included. So maybe working with, might work with some sacred oils as well a little bit. That's included. So what's not included is getting there, basically. Your transport to the location. If anybody needs any help with figuring that out, you can get in contact with me as well. I know there's a few people flying over from the UK, so there will be some carpooling from the airport and from the Cork City. Yeah.
And timing?
Timing, oh yeah.
The arrival day.
So I put down 11 a.m, but you know, I'm constantly changing things.
we're always changing. We're constantly changing.
Working with me is not an easy thing. It's exciting. It's living on the edge.
Definitely.
So I just did it to 12 p.m. for starting on Friday, because for time for people to get there, you know.
12 p.m. Friday the 19th.
Friday the 19th, and cool. Then we'll be closing 2 p.m. on the Sunday.
I guess just to add that we've obviously spoken a lot about trauma release and emotions and and exploding energies and things like that, is that it doesn't necessarily mean it will be like that. It can, depending on you really, on the person that's coming,
yeah.
It can be very, very blissful, very peaceful and integrative. And both me and Rebecca are very experienced sort of therapists in a few different modalities, so we're used to holding space for groups, and that if there's something that needs to be expressed, then you're in a safe place to do that, and we'll be held in that, and we'll also make sure that everybody is grounded and, you know, like safe to leave and go home, and we're not just going to take you into the processes and then throw you out at the end of the retreat and say, okay, go and deal with it. We really want to make sure that this is fun and safe to just come as you are, and let's see what happens. And see what adventures we can have.
You reminded me of something else there, Katie, as well, actually. I'm going to be creating a WhatsApp group for everybody that's coming, and we will keep that group then open for 7 days after the retreat as well. So people can, if things are coming up for them for the week after the retreat, that can go into that chat. And then if stuff comes up after that, they can always get in contact with myself or Katie personally. Yeah.
That's a wonderful idea.
Because aftercare, of course, is super important. So yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it's what we do afterwards as well, so that's
yeah, yeah. And even yeah, I would my experience with inner dance as well, as you go, and as Katie said earlier, nothing might happen, and then you wake up the next morning, you're like, something happened, I just don't know what it was. And then it constantly unfolds, and you process and you integrate as you just live your life afterwards.
Yeah,
which is beautiful.
Something else has come up for me, but I feel like it's not in the right places, so you might be editing this part out. It could have gone in like about 30 minutes ago or something. I feel like it's important to acknowledge that this isn't transmissions. We're not working with transmitting energy to people or putting something in them. Like, I guess we already said that in a way. This is what it's what they already have within them. Also important to acknowledge, and it was Katie mentioned it once in one of the posts, that it's not about joining any priestess lineage of any sort or anything like that. It's really what's within ourselves and listening to that.
Definitely, we're not calling in any kind of ascended masters or working with symbols or any kind of beings or anything in that way. It's really us and us as the group, and what we can, where we can go with that.
We were to find you both on the interweb, and I will also put contact details in the description.
So for myself, it's Chaos and Clarity on Facebook and Instagram, but your best bet is to email me either .a.therapy@gmail.com or then for Katie.
Yes, so on social media, if you look for Awakened Belly Dance, you're going to find me. There's lots of other podcasts and free sessions on YouTube as well. There's a YouTube channel. And either Katie Holland or Awakened Belly Dance. And I have a newsletter as well, and I send out emails each month with all of my activities. And you can join there and also read more about what I do and what Awakened Belly Dance is. It's awbdance.com. So it's like shortened Awakened Belly Dance.
Beautiful. Wonderful. That's fantastic.
I think we got everything in that we wanted to speak about. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks for sharing everything. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, Ima.
You're both incredible. And it was such a pleasure to talk to you both. Nice to meet you, Katie. And you've been around. I love you. thank you so much, guys. So the retreat in April 19th, West Cork. Get in contact with Rebecca.
Perfecto. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you.